With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
On this week's Patreon-exclusive episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast, we're talking about the Squire Bullet Tele. I give the other guys on the podcast £400, and they decide how they would mod a Bullet Tele to make it as good as a Mexican Tele. Will they be able to do it? Find out at patreon.com/guitar nerds, where from as little as $1 a month, you can support the Guitar Nerds podcast. patreon.com/guitar nerds. Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds podcast, the world's number one guitar podcast. I'm your host, Mark Packham, joined today by Matt Knight.
Hello.
Jay Cross.
Hello.
And Joe Branton.
Ah.
Matt, we can't see you anymore, which is a shame. Sorry about that. We'll continue on.
You can see the ripple effect that comes out from when he starts talking, though, which is quite nice. So we've got a visual representation of Matt's mouth moving up and down.
His aura.
Yeah, that's what it is.
We can see his aura. So, thanks for joining us for this visual podcast. Joe Branton, it's your birthday week.
Yes.
And you're wearing a crazy shirt.
That's right. It's a maternity blouse. £5 sail rail.
Looks great.
Yeah, it is great. It's my three men and a little lady shirt.
It looks more like what Homer was wearing in that episode of The Simpsons.
The Moo Moo.
Yeah, when he stays home and gets the drinky bird.
Yeah, it's got that edge to it.
I can see that being you in a few years. You're just like, I found a way to stay at home and just hang out with the drinky bird.
This is my shirt for when I am feeling bloated. So, yes.
Post birthday bloat.
Yeah.
What did you get up to on your little birthday?
I went to All Points East Festival at Victoria Park in London to watch Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds, which is absolutely fantastic. Rare that you get to see Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds these days. So that was fantastic. Great to
that
see.
That record that he put out last year, 2 years ago.
Skeleton Tree.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, what a fantastic
it's
record.
It's so good. It's so, so dark.
Yeah. It was really amazing. Good. There was an excellent mix of tracks from Skeleton Tree. Tracks from Murder Ballad, some stuff from Push the Sky Away, and a little bit of, what was the one before Push the Sky Away? The Boatman or something like that? I can't remember.
I don't really know, to be honest.
I know that record less well than the others, to be honest. But what was fantastic, two things that were fantastic. Warren Ellis was there with his four-string
tenor.
Tenor Mustang.
Yeah, amazing.
And you don't have the double neck, because he's also got a signature double neck. Which is like a tenor, and I think it's like... it's like a normal size guitar in tenor tuning and then like a small mandolin or something.
Oh, that's amazing. No, he was splitting between playing the grand piano, playing his violin. He had his custom shop chrome violin.
Of course.
Which he was playing, he holds like a guitar and plays it with a plectrum. So he had that, and he just uses it for weird soundscapes,
right,
like
okay.
Big sort of aggressive sort of sounds and stuff.
How did it go?
And the four string tenor Mustang, which was absolutely fantastic. I know we've seen pictures of it and stuff, but I didn't realise the tenor Mustang also has a 3-in-1 headstock.
Is it an airline thing?
It's Eastwood.
Yes, Eastwood. Yeah.
But yeah, it was fantastic. It looked so cool. It was such a great guitar. And what was interesting was he was actually playing the guitar line from Jubilee Street. The lead line from that, he plays on that tenor Mustang, which is such like a really like quintessential Nick Cave guitar line. I just never thought for a second it would be played on a four-string guitar.
Couldn't tell you how it goes.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. But it was fantastic. So that was really cool. And Nick Cave had... Kylie Minogue come out on stage and
do that
perform.
One that goes.
Yes, that's right. They performed that that together, which was fantastic. But it was a wonderful set.
That's the only one that I know.
He got the bulk of the audience onto the stage at one point. Obviously, the bulk, but probably about 40 or 50 people he pulled up on stage for at least the last 20 minutes of the set.
That is the sort of thing that if it's the last song or the last chorus or the last, like, you know, couple of minutes, you're like, yeah, this is wicked. But if you ended up being duped into going up onto the stage
and the sound's and then he
played another five songs, yeah, you'd be like, I feel comfortable up here anymore.
Yeah. He got them to do things like he got them all to sit down and he walked amongst them and stuff. He picked a few up and, like, sang to them. And so he's obviously such a ridiculous performer. And let's not forget, obviously, Nick Cave, previously of The Birthday Party, widely cited as being the most violent live post-punk band of all time in history. So he is a fantastic
widely cited.
Yeah.
Who else played?
Patti Smith played.
Oh,
as
was
well.
That good?
Yeah, that was fantastic. What a wonderful slice of history. So that was really good to see. Actually, her guitarist had my favourite setup of the night because he had a Stratocaster that looked like it was Fender. I couldn't quite see if it was said Fender on the headstock, but it was a custom Sunburst Talk Guard Strat with just the middle pickup.
Yeah,
it just had a volume control and just the middle pickup.
Very weird.
So weird. It sounded amazing. Like, I was kind of like, I noticed how, yeah, it was, but I really noticed the tone on some of his lead lines, and I was trying to, like, look at the big screen to see if there was, like, a cut of him so I could see where the pickup selector was on the Strat, and then I was like, hold on, there isn't one. And then he moved his hand away for a minute and I realized that there's just one pickup, which was really cool. That was a great setup. He was really interesting. St. Vincent played as well.
Okay.
I've seen her a couple of times this year, and there was no way I was going to get far enough forward for Nick Cave if I went to the bulk of her set.
Different stage.
Was it full band or was it just...
She was playing full band for the first time in a long time.
Because last time you saw her was solo, wasn't it? The last couple of times.
Last couple of times. So I saw her in LA with Mary. And I saw her also with Mary in London a few months before that. Both times it was a solo performance. And I've seen her before with a band. And she was much better before.
With a band?
Yeah.
And how was it this time?
Well, I caught a song from further back, but it looked like and you know, sounded like from the back. It just had loads more life to it.
Yeah,
everything
I think
was
that's
just
always
a bit stagnant.
Yeah, that's always the thing, though. I think if you've got a full band, it's just always going to sound better. Yeah. But I guess to a certain degree, St. Vincent is kind of at a point now where does she need to spend that money? You know, yeah. Does she need to spend the 10 grand a day or whatever it is to get those high quality session musicians?
Absolutely not.
And the gear rental and transporting it and getting techs to load it up and everything? Or could she just
get a mini disc player?
Could she just rock up with her guitar and play it? You know, I think something like this is a one off massive show.
Course,
I mean, it'll
be
really cool. But if you're on tour, I can understand why she doesn't do it.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. But yeah, I think there were some other bands, but honestly, I was so
Courtney
blind
Barnett
drunk.
Played.
Oh yes, I saw
did
her.
Did you see her?
I did go and see Courtney Barnett. That was great.
Telly?
She plays a left-handed jazz master.
She has
a jazz master.
She is like three guitars. She has a black left-handed Telecaster, which she often plays as well. But no, she didn't play the Telly at all this time.
All right.
She has like a black 70s Strat, like black with a black plate and white pickups. Which she played for the bulk of the first half of the set, and that sounded fantastic. I really liked that sound on her stuff. And then for the rest of the set, she split between her two Jaguars.
Jazzmasters.
No, she has got Jazzmasters as well. She has an excellent tasting guitar and has a really cool range of instruments. But she was splitting between two Kurt Cobain Jaguars. So she had one that was the finish that's currently available. Because listeners, Courtney Barnett is left-handed as well, so it's very impressive that she managed to get such cool guitars to use as well.
Yeah.
But she had the Kurt Cobain Jaguar that's currently in production, which is a double humbucker Jaguar it has three rotary controls on the control pot area instead of what is it, standardly two?
Yes.
So it's three really tight in together rotary controls there. I don't know what they are for. Are they individual volumes?
Yeah, two individual volumes and a
master tone.
And a tone, yeah. Because that's what Kurt Cobain did. He put that middle one in.
Took all the switching out, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, I see. Well, yeah, she had the one that's currently in production, which is Sunburst Talk Guard. And then she also had a Candy Apple Red with what looked like a mirror plate.
Oh, right, weird.
It might have been a chrome plate.
I think that's a custom shop, because I seem to remember seeing something about that a couple of years ago.
Okay.
I can't, because a friend of mine, Mark's, sometimes is her guitar tech.
Oh, really? Oh, right.
Yeah, cool. Yeah. And I'm pretty sure I saw him.
Oh, that's cool. Post up, yeah, it was a matching headstock, Candy Apple Red.
Yeah, yeah, that's the one I've seen.
Chrome plate.
That's, yeah, yeah.
That was fantastic.
Her new record is amazing.
Yeah,
it was really, really good.
I like it a lot.
Yeah, it's really good. It's just like chilled out. She's got a wicked voice. Guitar playing's cool.
Yeah, guitar playing's really cool. It was an excellent set and really, really interesting. I really liked that the whole day had this sort of this classic sort of post-punky feel to it. It was really good. There was some really tidy, aggressive guitar playing going on. Some really nice taste in guitar across the board with most things. Very cool.
Big question is: did you get anything guitar related for your birthday? Well, now that you're the king of the pedals, the keeper of the guitar nerd stock, do you actually need anything anymore?
I think I'm kind of I've inquired about one thing myself. Okay. but no. So actually I've been bidding on a 70s Music Master on eBay. Music Master bass in well, I guess it was probably Olympic White at one point.
Yeah.
With a Torque Guard. And it's been retrofitted with one of the new Seymour Duncan, the 51 P bass pickups that they do. I think because I think they released that as a like an SPB 51 1, 2, and 3. 3 being the quarter pounder, 2 being the vintage hot, and 1 being the classic. So I think it was the one, which is really cool. But I've just been notified on my email that I've been outbid. It was about as much as I really wanted to.
What's that sort of thing going for right now?
So it depends on the condition. This is like obviously a retrofitted pickup, and the plate isn't original either. So this one is sitting around £400. There's like there's a mint condition, Lake Placid Blue. I almost said Pelham. Lake Placid Blue, Mint Guard Music Master on there at the moment, which is going for I think about £650. Although there is one identical with a bite now of 1,200. I think 1,200 is a bit strong.
That's
I think if it was the Mustang, I think 1,200 is probably the top echelons of where a Mustang should be, but certainly not a Music Master. Certainly not with that hardware and like no through neck.
They're really basic
tuning. Yeah,
really basic.
I really like the Music Masters. I would prefer a Mustang. But I've been looking for an old one for a while, and they're just really slim pickings at the moment online. But I have also given Tom Stanley at Stonefield a shout.
See what if you can do something small for you.
Get the Stinger.
Yeah.
Well, there's a Stinger on it, yeah.
Oh, God.
Not the double neck.
Look, the Polymath's tour season is starting soon, and we're talking about gimmicks, and I'm like, what could be more gimmicky than a double neck?
Okay.
Would you actually use both necks?
I would.
I'd find a way to use the stinger. If you've got the stinger,
yeah.
How's the stinger tuned?
It's a guitar. The stinger's a guitar,
but with bass strings.
Yeah.
With a really wide neck. Really wide neck.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
So it's a six-string guitar.
Yeah.
With a six-string bass neck.
It's only 19.
So it's a bass that starts at the 12th fret.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
A six-string
bass that
starts at the 12th fret. Yeah.
Okay. And what would you?
For like guitar lines,
is there two outputs on the double neck? Is there two outputs?
I think it could be whatever Joe wants it to be.
So could you do the bass line, and because I know that
I'd probably run it all through one board.
I know that a lot of your bass lines are, you know, pretty ploddy and, you know, they're pretty samey. So you could just do, you know, you could do the 12 bar blues, loop that, and then play over the top.
Well, I'd probably just use the stinger for weird soundscape stuff.
But
you know, I just emailed him to ask him how much one would be.
I love that you're like, right, we need a gimmick. I've got a great idea.
Double neck.
I need is £5,000.
Yeah, not just
I
like,
tell you what, when we play at the Green Doors Tour to 100 people next week, it's going to be amazing.
Yeah.
The gimmick's not like, I'll put on a bit of eyeliner or like wear some funny T-shirts or something like that. No.
We've been announced for one of the larger stages at Arctangent, and so we were thinking we needed bigger gimmicks. So last week we purchased 4 6-foot
inflatable.
Don't tell
everyone.
Yeah, should you be giving this
away?
No,
it'll be fine. No one listens to Polymath who listens to this podcast. But we purchased 4 6-foot inflatable unicorns. Like 30 beach balls, I think it was, just ordinary beach balls.
Wasn't this your gimmick 2 years ago?
And a ton of
glitter
cannons.
No, it was bananas.
We had inflatable bananas before, but 6-foot unicorns, man.
Yeah, that's probably quite big.
Yeah, it's going to be good. 4 of them.
You should fill them with helium.
Well, that's a good idea. We were thinking about filling them with NOS.
I think we should not go down this route. We should not go down this route.
Will they explode?
Who knows?
One tiny thing that you did see this week, Joe Branton, a brand new guitar from DV Mark.
Oh, that was so good.
I totally forgot to mention it. Yeah, well, you, they were Matt, at you, the moment thing.
Yeah, you got to play it because I think I saw this and was aware of this because you put a picture up of it on the Guitar Nerds forum on Facebook.
And then I sort of never really talked about it, but they were just like, well, we just really needed like a travel guitar and we're branching out into other areas and we were like, well, we'll make this. But he had a cow print one.
Oh, amazing.
And I was like, that is incredible. The whole thing, cow print.
Why does that exist?
For listeners who don't know what this DV Mark travel guitar is, there are pictures of it on the Guitar Nerds forum on Facebook if you're not on that. But it is essentially a travel guitar, which is a Super Strat in an HSS pickup configuration with a Wilkinson Trem, and it's a very modern sort of quite 80s, I guess, looking thing with a maple neck, and it comes in seafoam green, which is wicked. So it's kind of, it's got that sort of Charvel, like San Dimas sort of feel to it.
San Dimas.
What? How do you pronounce it?
San Dimas. San Dimas High School Football Rules.
Oh God, I think I've done a review on it and called it the San Dimas.
I have just remembered, like literally just now,
right.
I saw these at NAMM. And
really?
I just forgot about it. Yeah, I took some photos, look. Showing Joe. There's also a cherry sunburst.
That's right, the cherry sunburst one's going to be affordable because that is the downside of these. They are £500.
Yeah, I mean, it does seem like a lot of money.
I'll tell you what, it played perfectly. Proper guitar.
I completely agree with you, Matt Knight. It was actually off the back of your picture because I knew we had the fellows coming into the shop from what is it, MSL Pro,
yeah,
and so
yeah.
So I swung them an email and asked them if they were going to be bringing this down. So they brought one down for us to have a butcher's at. But they come in a really nice plush travel soft bag, which I think would be excellent for the road. It might be my new favorite.
That's a bit pointless.
Say that again.
I thought you were going to say hard case, and I was like, that's a bit pointless.
No, yeah, it's a really nice plush travel case. But I think it's cool that DV Mark are branching out to this thing. The only thing I think, they've got, like, the pickups in them say, like, DV Mark on them, and it's like,
all you're doing is
no one cares. Yeah, you're just cheapening it.
What if they're trying to launch their own range of pickups?
Totally,
and if they do, great.
That was what I was saying in the Facebook group about this, is it is really interesting that they have jumped kind of from bass amps to, the guitar amps, And then from guitar amps to guitars. And it is really cool that they're doing something that isn't just, okay, well, here's a Strat copy. Okay, well, here's a Les Paul copy. But they're really small. You know, they are kind of, this is a bit of a weird, unique shape.
And really well built.
Yeah, and it's not just cheap crap either. By the looks of things, it's proper stuff. Interesting to see what they do next.
Well, this is the thing, like DV Mark and Mark Bass have never been like cheapy brands, and they're following this through.
Why this has come about? Clearly, Marco's just gone, I've got quite a lot of travelling to do in the next 12 months or so. Can we sort of make a guitar for me?
Probably.
And then that's become in the range.
Well, I was speaking to them.
He listens to this podcast, and he's like,
oh yeah, of course.
Joe Branton, he needs a new travel guitar.
Definitely. But I was speaking to the guys at MSL Pro, and they were saying that the new microamps, things like the there's the 50. I can't remember what the 50
Galileo.
There's the Micro 50 Mark II, the Micro Jazz.
Yeah, and there's something dog, isn't there? Raw dog,
which we talked about.
Yeah.
Gear of the year, but most of the mini heads now are like 50 watts. That one's 250. I've put an inquiry in for a Micro Jazz 50.
Yeah, they were saying that those micro heads are the most profitable thing in the DV Mark based catalog now.
Well, I'm sure that's something that they are appreciative of you for sharing with everyone.
But no, as in, sorry, they sell the most. They move the most units of those over everything in Mark Base.
Right, okay.
Which is incredible that DV Mark has taken off to such a massive extent.
Well, completely. But I think you're always going to get that because guitars are just... Guitars
There's
and
more
guitar
awesome.
Stuff is more popular than bass.
Yeah, yeah of you course.
Most bass players will buy an amp and have a bass, and that's it. You know, it is something that's changing, but guitar players are just more adventurous.
Yeah, also, DV Mark heads, I think, are in generally doing something quite different from other brands. Like, there's a lot of other people doing the mark-based stuff style now, you know, small, like, Class D type thing. I can't really think of anyone who's doing that kind of amp, like, high-end, solid-statey kind of tiny guitar heads.
I think a lot of that is because that sort of space is being hoovered up by Kemper by people who are after super high-end modelling.
Yeah, what if you don't want that, though? What if you just want one sound but super loud?
If you want a clean pedal platform, I think DV have got it tied up at the moment.
That's why I'm after the Micro JS 50. Because when they had the combos, I was like, this is great, but I don't want a 1x8 combo.
Those combos were completely bananas. Because when they first came in, I thought that they had chipped us an empty box because they were so light. You could pick up one of those. Was it a 1x8, Matt?
It was a 1x8 and I think a 1x10, 12.
I think whatever it was. I remember with one of them. I can't remember which one it was. I was able to pick it up with my little finger. I hooked that through the handle and I lifted it up. They were so light.
Yes, nice.
But they sounded great for pedals, and the head's actually got like an effects loop on it. Really nice reverb. 50 watts, totally clean. You can't distort it. I was like, it's perfect for guitar pedals. And I think they're like 350 quid, 400 quid, something like that. They're not.
That's the weird part. DV Mark has gone down such a different route to Mark Bass. Whilst making a really similar product, DV Mark have made them really affordable, whereas Mark Bass were kind of, all their Class D stuff was, it was the most expensive Class D stuff you could get.
But they were made in Italy, right?
Yeah,
initially.
These ones are made and not made in Italy. I'm not sure where they're made, but I think they're Chinese or Indonesian or something like that, I think.
Do you know what else is funny? Like, with DV Mark going down this road, this is the time that Mark Bass have just... We don't obviously often talk about bass stuff on the podcast, but Mark Bass have just switched up their catalogue and introduced the new... the Casa, which is... it's a signature range from the bass player from Snarky Puppy.
Okay.
And it is vintage voiced, vintage looking, like sort of Ampeg-esque, Fender Super Bassman-esque.
So is it...
Gear. Like they do 810s.
Oh, yeah, wow, it's huge.
Yeah, and they do like 810 cabs with it and
I assume
stuff.
It's not Valve, though. I assume it's still like Class D.
Yeah, it's Class D. It just looks the deal.
Because they've done stuff like that before. They have done some bigger heads.
That Valve head.
Randy Jackson.
No,
as well.
The Randy Jackson was just Valve preamp, and they did a 500.
Yeah, yeah, sure. Yeah, but it was in a bigger box.
You're thinking of the Classic 300, which was their digital interface.
So good.
That amp was absolutely incredible until it stopped working.
Yeah.
It was a nightmare.
No, but it told you on the little readout that it wasn't working.
Yeah.
I was going to say, that was brilliant. You turn it on, it does this little like test mode, and it's like, oh, this valve is faulty. Like, great.
And I'm sure that's again, that's wicked when it flashes up 5 minutes before you're about to play.
Yeah.
And this Casa looks fantastic.
Yeah, it does. I like it. I like the again, you know, the best Ampeg head ever made, the SVT 450. This is going down a similar route.
But this is a similar sort of thing, isn't it? But
you say they're doing an 810 for this as well.
Yeah, they do.
really?
There's an 810 in the Casa range, and they're set to release a load of other cabs as well for it. So it'll be interesting to see. But apparently, this has been really well received, so this could be a new route for Mark Bass, which would be funny seeing them for the first. Well, not for the first time, as we just said, but you know, for the first time in a while, going down this route. Meanwhile, DV Mark maximise on. You know, making amp heads you can fit in your back pocket.
They know there's an Ampeg resurgence coming and they're trying to get in there.
Talking of Ampeg, I've just had a quick look. So an Ampeg SVT 810, so the current model, is 75 kilos.
That's slightly heavier than me.
The Mark Bass Casa 8x10 is 41 kilograms. Yeah. It's almost half the weight.
Yeah, I bet you could lift that with one arm.
Yeah. This looks great. I might buy an 810.
back in.
I'm back in the game. I don't have a car big enough to carry it around, but whatever.
Talking about buying stuff, Matt, you got some new bits this week.
Did. I got a drum machine. Of all guitar-related things, I got a fancy drum machine. Roland TR-08, but I won't talk about that too much because I'm sure most people aren't interested.
Retro
80s.
I'm super
not
interested.
To go down to the synth nerds podcast.
No, I'm Desert Island Synth.
Who would do that?
I am super interested in this because I was actually looking this week at drum machines, thinking about whether I was going to get a Vulcan Beats or
well,
TR-08.
Is, you get a TR-08, it sounds like an 808, and what's the best thing you can run it through? Space Echo, obviously.
Well, completely.
So I spent a weekend just running this drum machine through a Space Echo and playing the Jurassic Park theme tune.
Of course.
Lots of reverb.
I was thinking about you at the weekend, Matty, because Jay and I watched a bit of your live stream into Guitar Notes where you were just playing around with reverbs and
don't
stuff.
Tell him.
Why don't you... I reckon you should just record a bit of it and then just put it out, a little album on Spotify, Matt Knight, little... Just basically do like an hour's piece, but then chop it up into 10 tracks or something.
Why don't I do a
Metal
minute
Machine
piece,
music.
Slow it down by 1,000%.
You could do that.
It's not slowing it down, it's stretching.
Stretching. No, stretching. Yeah, that's very true.
I found that Brian Eno, well, I'm sure it wasn't actually Brian Eno, but there's a Brian Eno page that I follow on Twitter that posted a link to a program that I think is free that will allow you to stretch.
I tried to do it once and it sounded so rubbish. Like the pro, whatever program was recommended.
You need a really good program.
Yeah, the one that I had sounded absolutely dreadful.
The one that did, because I did some reading into it, the one that I really like, the best stretched piece of music is the Jurassic Park theme. And that was used by a program called Paul Stretch.
Yeah, I used that for something else and it sounded awful.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, the Jurassic Park theme is unbelievable. Yeah. We listen to it fairly regularly at work. I love it.
Yes, it's good. So, Matty, yeah, why don't you record some of your stuff so people can hear it?
Yeah, or maybe I'll just live stream it once only. That's it. One time performance.
Why don't you just build it into the CD player of a BMW?
Merzbo.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe. And I also got a guy at work bought a guitar, which I've taken home with me because I need to use it for a project this week. Road-worn Strat in Sunburst. And it is bloody lovely. Straight out of the box, plays like an absolute dream.
I've always kind of had a bit of a soft spot for those. I just think they're... The only thing is, because the Relicking, I think, is all the same on all of them, once you've seen a few of them, like in the shop, you're a bit like, oh, yeah.
But, of course, the idea of a road worn is it's going to wear with you. That's
sure,
why it has
sure.
the thin nitrocellulose.
Sure.
I used to love the Highway 1 series. And
yeah.
This is obviously an evolution of that in a way because the body finishes the same. What's nice is that it's not... I miss the heavy Relicking they used to do on the bodies, but I think it's better with the light Relicking on the necks they do now.
Yeah.
Because I think they like when I think a lot of people think they're overly worn, so they've like scaled it back.
Oh, have they changed them then since they started?
Yeah, so they're not like they're, I guess they're more of a light Relic now than not than a heavy Relic.
Right, okay. That sounds better. I didn't realize that.
No, they're really good.
Ferro fretboard as well.
Oh yeah, because you've got you've got one of the ones. I really like the Tele. I mean, I realize that's an extremely boring thing for me to say.
Are they cheaper or more expensive than a Baja?
More expensive. They're just over £1,000.
Just under a grand.
Pounds. Just under a grand.
Yeah.
They are fantastic guitars. I think there's a big old price difference. Bear in mind it's a Baja with a thin nitro
finish. It's kind of differences, but
yeah.
What is crazy is that it just made me remember of the time.
Oh really?
That you used to be able to buy a Mexican Strat for like a few hundred quid, and now the range is so massive and the quality is so good across the board. But it just, in a way, it feels bizarre to spend that money on a Mexican guitar when you worked in a shop when there was only really one Mexican guitar you could buy.
Mexican standard, the most boring guitar.
I think
it was like 350 quid.
They are definitely an awkward price point at that because you think you invest 350 more pounds and you can get an American Pro. Like, you know,
it depends what you want, though. If you want, like, a vibey... Yeah, if you want a vibey old guitar.
Of course.
I like that warning because it feels like a custom shop. It doesn't have the same, like, finesse feeling, I guess, that a custom shop does. But it certainly, like, gets close. So if someone who goes, I really love a custom shop 62 Strat, but I'm never going to be able to afford
three grand.
I think it's a brilliant guitar for the money. Absolutely brilliant.
Why do other companies not make guitars in Mexico? Have we ever found that out?
I've got no idea.
It just seems a bit weird.
No, it's Martin.
The Fender Cartel.
Martin, we've got the Navajo factory.
But no other electric guitar manufacturers make in Mexico. You'd think that it would be an obvious one for someone like Gibson, for example.
Well, completely. I think it would be a very smart move if Gibson did something like that.
But I guess maybe Fender owned the Mexican factory.
Yeah,
they do.
And I guess in like Korea with World Music, they are just a guitar factory, and you can just go there and hand them blueprints and they'll make it.
You would think that someone would go, okay, well, there's obviously demand for Mexican guitars. I'm going to set up a guitar factory and then go to Gibson and Ibanez and whoever.
I mean, maybe the thing is it's just, you can do that, but if you're going to set up a factory, set up a factory in China where labor is cheaper.
Sure.
And it's...
But just for mid-range guitars, you know.
Well, completely. I guess a lot of it comes down to, can you justify... Could, say, Gibson justify opening up a factory in Mexico?
From scratch.
Yeah, how much... Without the heritage there, how much would the guitars... How much more do the guitars need to be to justify opening the shop in Mexico rather than in China?
Yeah.
You know, I don't really like talking about people in the sort of commodity sense.
Sure.
You know, from a balance sheet point
cost
of view.
Of labor, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
But yeah, to answer your question, Matt, Fender does own the factory in Ensenada, opposed to it being like a rented factory or whatever.
Well, when Fender buy Gibson, they'll be able to make the Gibson guitars there, right?
Well, yeah, man.
Speaking of guitars that are going to relic well due to a light nitrocellulose finish.
Oh, yeah, you've also seen some Gibsons this week.
Yeah, the Amazon, and I appreciate American listeners, this may well be slightly older news because all these guitars were an Amazon exclusive for Amazon US, but they finally made their way over to the UK. The Gibson SG Fusions and M2 Melody Makers have worked their way over to the UK.
I've got a question about those.
Yes.
Why is the SG so much more money than the Les Paul?
Yes, there is a bit of a price difference. So, listeners, what these are essentially brightly coloured in much a similar sort of series concept, I guess, as the Fender offsets. These are pastel-ish, brightly coloured SGs and Melody Makers. The Melody Makers are retailing at £399 British pounds, and the SG Fusions are £499.
Yeah, what does Fusion stand for?
So the difference, I don't know.
Fun, unicorn, silly, hat. Is
there's no H in fusion.
I was thinking on the fly.
That's the worst thing you've ever said.
The Melody Makers are poplar, a popular body, maple neck. They're a poplar body, maple neck and rosewood fingerboard, whereas the SG Fusions are mahogany with a maple neck and rosewood fingerboard.
I'm into that lavender fog SG Fusion.
Well, this is it.
If it had the full plate on it, so you could take the neck pickup out and then just make it into an SG Junior.
Do you know what? I did a video review of these and I said that's exactly what I'd do if I got this. I'd just buy a custom plate and turn this into a Junior.
If they did it in strawberry milk, which is the
strawberry
the
milk
make.
Is their rich pink that they do the Melody Makers in.
So good. If I really needed another guitar, I think I'd just buy that for the colour.
The colours available in the Melody Makers are strawberry milk, which is like a lipstick pink, citron green, which is a sort of greeny yellow sort of vomit, and then bright cherry, which is just a bright red, teal, which is a sort of Daphne blue sort of thing, and phantom grey, which is what it said. The SGs come in orange solid Which is that the
outcome of your birthday?
Yeah, which is a very nice sort of light tangerine. I think quite a tasteful colour, and that comes with a black plate, unlike everything else, which comes with quite a cheap looking pearl plate. And then they do lavender fog and light green, which are both pastely blues and greens, respectively. But
there are other colours on the Gibson website. You not get those?
No, these are just the last of the stock. Right, so okay, it's what didn't sell on Amazon, essentially. So this is what we got. We did actually have four colours of SG. There are only three on the GAC website now, so I assume we sold one.
I hate the bridge.
Yes, it's an all-in-one bridge. That's true. So it's a bridge that deals with...
But I've got no problem with wraparound, obviously, because, you know... Well, I guess that, yeah, that would be two parts. But, yeah, I mean, why have they done that?
Rather than having it in two pieces?
Yeah.
No, I don't know. It's kind of like the junior bridge, isn't it? Like, you know, on juniors, you just have the one piece, but it's angled, so you can't...
No, because I'm thinking about mine. Mine's like, SG Junior. Yeah, sorry. Yeah.
I mean, at the same time, Mark, this guitar is £400.
I realise that. Yeah, I understand.
This is a £499 in the case of the SG. In the case of the Melody Maker, it's a £399 American built Gibson in fun colours. I think that's awesome.
I'm totally into that. And to me, it does come back a little bit to like, why would you ever buy a top-end Epiphone when these guitars are readily available?
I mean, that was something that I never understood working in the shop. But a lot of it just came down to the fact that people wanted a guitar that looked like a top-end
Gibson.
Proper
Les Paul, yeah.
Oh, these... People wanted to pay £550 for an Epiphone Les Paul Custom rather than... Yeah. £550 for a Gibson Les Paul LPJ.
I must admit, though, I keep seeing the Joe Bonamassa one pickup Firebird and thinking that has got to be one of the best looking.
It's so cool. That was great. It looked incredible. No, they did it in gold and sunburst. I actually thought it looked amazing in sunburst. And Epiphone normally completely mess up.
Well, I think that they've done a lot of work in picking artists and doing cool guitars,
yeah,
as opposed to the previous expensive stuff, which was stuff like a Les Paul Custom.
Les Paul, like, 50s outfit.
Yeah, totally.
With the case.
A Les Paul tribute.
What is this guitar? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Prophecy and stuff like that.
Their most expensive, I guess, standard Epiphone that's not a signature or one of the Japanese built ones is the Epiphone Les Paul Tribute Plus
tops,
which is £650. And if I remember rightly, that is basically a standard, but it's American hardware.
Yeah, it's so
classic.
Weird.
Just that quite nice top on it as well.
That's blurring of the price points is just weird to me.
Yeah,
really,
but the
weird
top is not solid cap, is it? It's just...
Is it just a veneer? No, that's a shame. But, well, I mean, in the case of these, they certainly have that rough around the edges thing that all, like, low-end Gibsons have. Like, yes, you know, you can see the sort of the build problems with these guitars, but and the finish is very much like this is one coat of paint on here,
with
no varnish over the top.
That's kind of good though, because it will wear in an interesting way.
I think it wear in an interesting way. I think they're a perfect modern guitar. I think there's something you could do anything with. They played fine out of the box. Like, they weren't especially doggy. They weren't amazing, but I was like, this is a cool guitar for not much money. I want, like, you know, a Lavender Fog SG for £499.
I just love someone signed off on strawberry milk.
Yeah.
And just let someone, yeah, let's do it.
Yeah, it's a great colour. These colours are really interesting. One thing, I was doing the video with one of the other fellas at GAC, and he's a big Fender fan, and he really didn't like these because he felt that they hadn't nailed the colours. He felt like they'd gone... He was like, they've gone after those Fender colours, but none of them are tasteful. Like,
oh, they're all wicked, though.
Yeah, they're all very bright, though. And, like, they're, like, in the same...
Why have they not done a two-colour sunburst?
No, not like that. You think about the offset colours. Think about Shell Pink. Think about Sonic Blue.
That's
Daphne
what
they've
done, Strawberry Milk.
No, but these are very vibrant. And
yeah,
they're very
good.
Bright. And in real life, they are extremely vibrant.
But they're going after the success that they had with the Epiphone SLs.
Of course, yes, of course.
And to a more vintage extent, the SGX.
Oh, well, of course.
Which is what these actually remind me of a bit more, because they've got a similar plate. With that, should we dive into this week's...
Nude Apocalypse.
I might as well say this every week, but this week there is a brand new pedal from Electro Harmonix.
Yeah, so I'm really glad that we can finally reveal the details of the new Electro-Harmonix compressor. It's about time that we saw a new one. No, I'm of course kidding. This is the new Electro-Harmonix Oceans 11 Reverb that was, I think, announced the day after we podcasted last week. Yeah. So everybody, I'm assuming a lot of people would have seen this by now. This looks absolutely fantastic. And so it's an 11 setting reverb that looks not too dissimilar to someone's competition on the market.
The TC Electronic.
It looks exactly like a TC Electronic Hall of Fame. So I think this is great.
It's got more on it, though.
It does have about the same amount on it, I think.
Does it? No.
I'm not sure it's got more.
No. Some of the settings on there are like no one's done this before.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah.
It's got more algorithms, but it's got the same amount of slots because obviously the Hall of Fame has the 11 user slots.
Yes.
Right. Only 8 sounds, I think. And this one has
something
11
like that.
Sounds.
And also you've got I think there are some different modes within each of the, maybe not within each of the algorithms, but it looks fantastic. It sounds absolutely incredible. And what I think is really good, we were talking about this at work, and you know, someone at work brought up like, "Oh, you know, it's come out just after the marine layer," and I'm like, two different people are going to buy this, are going to buy these pedals. This is the people that are going to be worried about them. Worried is maybe not the right word, but it's Hall of Fame. Yeah. People who want loads and loads of options. And I think it's great that this has come out because the Hall of Fame has sat there as a high quality budget multi algorithm reverb kind of by itself for a long time.
Yeah.
I mean, what else is there? To a certain extent, I guess the RV6, although, you know, it doesn't have
the same amount of features that the Hall of Fame is for a compact has the most amount.
Yeah,
of
totally.
It's an absolute Swiss.
Totally. And I think it's really great that Electro-Harmonix have done this, and I would be very surprised if we don't see a number of other pedals in this sort of vein over the next few weeks and months, maybe even some Enam. I wonder if we'll get like a flashback type pedal.
I actually think this is kind of a little bit revolutionary in the same way that the Electro-Harmonix Canyon had like things like its octaving.
I guess that was kind of like the flashback, wasn't it? Canyon,
but the Canyon had those octaving delay tails, and I was like, what else does that? That was an amazing setting. It was such a sort of weird versatile soundscapey unusual delay feature that no one else was doing, and it was just like, yeah, this is one setting. Like Earthquaker Devices would have released that as a whole pedal.
Totally.
And Electro-Harmonix is just, it's one of the settings. And they've done the same thing. They've done the same thing with this, with the Ocean's 11.
This is obviously a continuation of the Canyon
series. Yeah.
My only problem with all of these things is there's probably so many good sounds on it. I hate having these kind of pedals on my board because you always like, there's just too many settings.
Have you read about some of the features?
I can never find anything that I want to stick with.
I think that is exactly, goes back to the point that I was saying, which is this isn't a pedal for you. This is a pedal for someone who maybe isn't really into pedals or doesn't really have doesn't really have an idea of what reverbs they're into. Like, you know what you like, and you've got reverb pedals that do loads of different sounds. This is as you say, Joe, it's a Swiss Army knife type pedal. And if this was out when I was still working in the shop, I would have absolutely loved it because it really was. You only had one choice. If someone went into the shop and they said, "Oh, I'm after a reverb pedal, I don't really know what I want," I would always reach for a Hall of Fame because it had so many different options on it. You gave people so much choice that they could go with. Whereas what you're after, Matt, is you want, right, I want something that's like massive and expansive, and got this, that, and the other, or I want something really, really short and really like slapbacky. You know what I mean?
Well, that's the thing. I was thinking like, oh, you know, it'd be good to have like a dedicated spring reverb. I was looking at this new Super Ahead that's come out that you can basically DI the reverb straight out. And I was like, oh, well, that's really cool. And then I looked at this and it's got spring reverb based on the classic Fender tank.
Yeah.
But I like that when you're on the algorithm, if you kick really quickly, the foot switch, it does the splash of the spring tank.
That is cool.
So good.
A brilliant feature, because the only thing that had that before was the electro spring king.
Yeah.
Which had the thunder pad, because you were kicking an actual spring tank.
I think the Carl Martin Headroom did it as well, because that had a spring in it.
Right, yeah.
That was also the size of a small building.
And it's like 400 quid.
Yeah, totally. But no, you're completely right. That like splash sound is just, it's like my favourite sound for a guitar. Like just kicking
the
amp a bit. Yeah.
The setting that's got me on this is its auto infinite option, which the way they describe it is it triggers a reverb wash for each note or chord, and when a new one is struck, the previous resounding reverb crossfades into the new one.
Basically,
I think that's post-rock.
This is like I want to watch that movie about the bus that had to speed through the city, and if it's speed, it's just a freeze. They should have just called it can freeze the sound, and when you're finished playing, you can freeze a different sound. Like, that's what it is.
I'm going to throw something out there. The Electro-Harmonix Freeze is one of the most influential pedals of the last 15 years.
You've said that before, haven't you?
I don't think so. Okay. But think how that has affected genres like the rubbish that Joe Branton plays. Basically, the technology that's in the Freeze is now in everything, and that is the sound that people use.
Yeah.
I think it's funny, because the Freeze is, from what I see, like on boards, or like especially like seeing on eBay, you see far more of the Super Egos, and then the Freeze is going for like mega money, because I think people still want the simplicity of the Freeze, because you can get like the Super Ego Deluxe, which has got a bunch of effects on it, and I think it's like one step too far, where the Freeze is just like a cool box that you basically step on, and then it's just like, there's your frozen sound, and then you can just like put it at the beginning of a chain and add loads of stuff to it. It's so simple and so genius.
Yeah,
I'm surprised they've not made a nano one of it, or at least put a remote jack on it for people who, like me, who use a switching system.
Yeah,
so you can like, you know, remotely trigger it somehow.
I could never get the Super Ego to work. I just couldn't make it a sound that sounded anything usable.
Yeah,
yeah, it was annoying.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think that Auto Infinite is basically the, I think it's an algorithm from the Super Ego that basically freezes a chord when you play, and then when you hit a certain trigger threshold, it crosses that, fades in one and crosses out the other, which is exactly what the Super Ego does.
Yeah, true. It's still super cool. Have you seen the dynamic one they have as well, which is it swells in your reverb tails.
Okay.
So a noteless swelling of your reverb tails, which is something you can build on the Hall of Fame, because Pete Thorne built it. It's one of Pete Thorne's tone prints on the TC. Is that?
Well, they also did on the Hall of Fame. They had a dynamic setting, and that was actually the opposite of this, the opposite of what you say.
Oh, really?
Which is, you would only get the it would do it on the flashback and on the Hall of Fame. You'd only hear the effect whilst you were playing.
Right.
So it would. There was no artifacts or anything. Like, as soon as you finished, that the delay stopped or the reverb stopped, which I thought was a cool idea, but I didn't really understand
gated reverb.
Yeah, like really intense gated reverb. Yeah.
There's apparently also a secondary switch on the Ocean's 11. There's a hidden feature, isn't there, for every effect?
It's the same as the Canyon, right?
I think so.
Oh, does the Canyon have that as well?
Yeah, Canyon has a similar thing. I think it basically like engages some alternate options. Like, I think on mod, it allows you to control like the mod speed, for example.
Oh, that's cool. I see.
And stuff like that. I think it will do things like that. I don't think it like engages an entirely different algorithm, but I think it allows you to alter controls that you couldn't before, like just on the four that are on the panel.
Another cool pedal out this week, the brand new Boost 18 from Lunarstone.
Yeah. Lunarstone are great, aren't they? We've had we've had some stuff from Lunarstone before.
And we had this pedal for some time.
Well, that's what I was going to get to. But we have had the True Drive. Was it called True Drive?
The TOD 1 and 2?
Yeah, True Overdrive. True Overdrive 1 and 2, yeah, which were fantastic. fantastic pedals. But yeah, we do also have the Boost 18.
Yeah.
And apparently it's just been unveiled. So yeah, I didn't realise that. That's definitely been up on our Instagram. Like, I've posted that on our Instagram probably 3 or 4 months ago. So whoops. But anyway, yeah, so this is an upgrade of the Lunarstone Pusher, which was their 15 decibel boost.
It's three louder.
That is exactly what it is. It is three louder. But the other idea of this is they actually are marketing this as, they're like, yeah, use it as a boost if you want. But if you set it on zero, it's the best make gooder a pedal you'll ever plug in.
I remember you saying this before.
Yeah, so their whole thing with it is like, yeah, this will give you like a real sort of valvey warmth. They're like, this is, you know, our Echoplex preamp. You know, this is their sort of like, turn this on and everything will just sound banging. It will give you that wonderful valvey warmth. It's in a mini pedal format, so it doesn't take up much room. Leave it on, everything will sound great. If you want to use it as a boost, use it as a boost. It's 18 decibels, which is tons. And the Lunarstone stuff always looks cracking. They have massive red dual LEDs, and they're just really clean and smart, very professional looking, really well built.
Yeah, it looks like studio gear.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I think these are, I don't know how much these are supposed to be retailing at. I'm not, oh, here we are, like $109
okay.
USDs.
So it might be like 99 quid, it might be £109.
It depends, doesn't it?
Who knows? Depends how much markup you put on it, Joe.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, this looks like an absolutely banging pedal, and you know, from a company that make fantastic drives. I mean, I know that it's good because we've had it for a long time.
Yeah, yeah.
It's really good.
Giving, for once, we're able to give an actual review rather than a preview, and yeah, the review is good.
Yeah, it's very good. Yeah, it looks fantastic. I think it's great. I've got loads of tiny boost pedals at my flat at the moment. Because there's the... do you remember AWOL, who make the
smallest boost.
The smallest boost in the world.
Well, he also mods the Canyon. So I wonder how long it'll be before he mods the Ocean's 11.
To do what? Yeah. Just to different sounds?
I think you've got a latching or non-latching bypass switch,
okay.
And then the second one adds in, it's momentary, and adds in infinite repeats in like a swelling fashion.
So that's cool.
Interesting.
It goes from 0 to 100 on the like feedback control. So and then there's an external in jack for tap tempo.
Matty, talking about modded pedals, did you see the picture this week? Someone, it was a Boss pedal, and I can't remember which one, but someone had basically put on a tiny synth patch bay onto the Boss pedal.
Simon the Magpie. Crazy.
Of course it was him.
I think he's in Sweden, but he's just like into basically like DIY, crazy modular. He's really into modular synths, so he builds a lot of his own modules.
Yeah.
And yeah, he's basically circuit bent a DS1, but each circuit bend, he's attached it to a small like micro jack. So you can patch different bends in the circuit together.
It looked absolutely bizarre.
He did, I think it was either a DS1 or a Metal Zone, had something like 36 different patch points on it.
Yes, crazy.
Which is a cool idea, because you can basically, yeah, like they're glitchy noise pedals for guitar or bass or whatever, but it just means that you can always just patch in different bits and it will always sound like totally different. Yeah, it's a great idea.
I think Boss should start doing that, I think, as an official thing.
As official mod.
Yeah.
The
yeah.
Modular mod.
Yeah, the mod mod.
The mod mod.
The mod 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 mod. Yeah, I want to see that from Boss. I think you should do that. It sounds good.
I'll do it myself.
Do it.
Yeah, Matt Knight taking over the pedal modding department.
I'll just circuit.
Do it, do it. And what we'll do is dive into this week's... Good. I was wondering where you were going to go with that. Let's do...
I'm glad that there was a lot of stuff for us just to like talk about at the start, because there's only those two pedals.
Yeah,
it's so...
But they're really interesting ones.
When's Summon Am? Like 2 weeks or something?
It's the end of this month. So
no one's releasing anything.
I think there's some big stuff coming.
No, there's not.
There's going to be a lot to talk about.
No one's releasing anything.
I know that there's some big stuff coming.
There's definitely not. It's going to be really dull. No one sent me any press releases.
That's because
sure.
You're out of the loop. People are like, not that Branton.
I'm going to have a great time because I'm going to be there.
And be boozed up.
At SNAM.
Business boozing.
I'm not going to be... No.
You'll be business boozed.
Working very hard.
Sure, sure.
Are you going to drink a pint of shots?
Surely a shot is a measurement.
A pint
is also a measurement. You're going to walk a kilometre of miles.
Yeah, do it.
Miles, so, talking about Miles. Miles says, I can't seem to get my hands on a Sterling St. Vincent no matter how hard I try. UK retailers, or at least the ones I've seen, are completely sold out and next to nothing on the second-hand market. Hot property in demand or limited stock on a more niche guitar? Or is there something bubbling under the surface? Joe Branton, you work for a retailer. What's going on with St. Vincent?
You bubble under the surface.
yes, no, you're absolutely right, kilometers. There are no Sterling St. Vincents in the UK at the moment at all anywhere. Now I don't know what the reason is for that from Sterling, but you know, they are, you're also completely right, they are something that people are crying out for. Like, we are contacted about them as a retailer, you know, I would say, you know, almost every week. They're an incredibly popular guitar. Everyone wants a St. Vincent, and not everyone wants to drop £2,500 on one. So yeah, the Sterling St. Vincent should be something that is propelling Sterling and Music Man to the next level. But instead, they've clearly not sorted out production, and they are suffering for it. I think it's a dumb move. Dumb move to miss that opportunity. But yeah, we managed to get like a couple in every now and again, and the last one we got in I bought. So
basically you're the problem. Yeah, that the customers problem. Can't get it.
Yeah, exactly.
I think you shouldn't be allowed to buy guitars anymore.
Well, this one took a knock, so
behind your desk took a knock. That sort of knock, was it?
No, it had nothing to do with me. But yeah, so unfortunately there are none in the UK. I hope there will be some soon, but we don't even have any solid dates on them. What a ridiculous thing. What a great guitar.
Yeah.
And, you know, they retail at like 700, 750, something like that. So it's the right sort of money that I think people are willing to take a stab on it.
Yeah.
At that sort of price point. At £2,500, I think you have to be, or £2,200, you have to be very invested. You have to really love that guitar. And I think for a lot of people, this is the sort of guitar that you might get to have something fun. And I think, you know, that is obviously the problem. There is, of course, there's actually no shortage and no problem with Music Man St. Vincents. We sell loads of them.
Yeah.
We just do them to order. And so they come in and go out per customer. And they do very well. But yeah, this should be the sort of thing that we have. They should release more colours. The same way that they did with the...
Whatever it was, strawberry milk or whatever.
Joe, if you remember correctly, all we have done for the last 5 years on this podcast is complain about the fact that
Music
Ernie
Man
Ball
too many
make
colours.
Too many Music Man make too many colours on their guitars.
Yeah, I know. They did actually announce at Winter NAMM doing a stealth black Sterling St. Vincent, which also has not materialised in the real world. So who knows? I hope it's soon, because man, you know, great guitars.
One last question. Mark, who I believe works at Boss, says Matt Knight's WWE alter ego is obviously the Big Boss Man. Mark, Jay, Joe, who are yours?
I feel like you're more qualified to answer this question than we are.
Oh, yeah, it's very tough. Because I'll just say people that you guys don't know.
Well, so can I have the Honky Tonk Man?
You can have the Honky Tonk Man.
You do kind of.
The Honky Tonk Man goes to Joey B. He wrestles under a different name now, and it was hilarious, and I can't remember what it was. Jay Cross, while you're researching Honky Tonk Man, who's your WWE alter ego?
I don't know.
It needs to be someone sort of fairly tall. He's not that big. I would say someone a bit tall.
Big Van Vader.
Wayne Ferris is his name now.
Yeah,
I think.
Goes under like the Rock and Roll Man or something like that.
The Tonky Honk Man.
The Tonky Honk Man.
I don't know who I'd go. I don't know who I'd be.
Paul Bearer.
Thanks, Matt.
You could be the Undertaker.
That's the only wrestler I could think of. At
you're
one
sort
point.
Of you're tall and a bit miserable and a bit gothic and that emo. Yeah, yeah. So maybe the Undertaker.
I don't look anywhere near enough like Kelsey Grammer, though.
That is true. But you've got similar personality traits.
Gold dust.
I'm going with gold dust.
I could feel gold dust. Yeah.
Okay. Fine. There we go. That's
Who are you?
I don't know. Who am I? Sort of like short, bit annoying.
Sting.
Shawn Michaels. Something like that. Very good at what I do, but also a bit of a bell.
Flying Brian.
Shane McMahon.
I could be. Yeah. I've got all the money. I could be Flying Brian Pillman. Yeah. Sort of the loose cannon. I don't think I've got the personality for that. But
Val Venus.
Yeah, I'm going with Valvinus. That's the end. With that, we should draw this podcast to a close. Thank you very much for listening this week. If you want to hear more, we're going to go and record a Patreon episode where I've got a little sort of a kind of game lined up.
Oh, no.
Based on a question.
Is it more wrestling?
The question came in from Toby. Toby asked, so I'm definitely buying one of those bullet tellies with the intention of modding it. How far would you go? I'm thinking of pickups, bridge, and tuners, and seeing how I get on with the neck. So what we're going to do in the Patreon, I'm going to assign you a budget. I'm going to assign you a budget, and you've got to tell me what mods you would do to one of those new elite bullet telly, or whatever they're called. Bullet tellies. Squire bullet tellies. So that's okay. What we're going to do over on Patreon. If you want to hear that, Patreon.
Log over to 60 Cycle Humcast.
No, patreon.com/guitar nerds, where from as little as $1 a month, you can support the Guitar Nerds podcast. At $1 a month, you get the regular episode ad free and early. And at $5 a month, you get the extra half an hour every week. At $10 a month, you get your name read out in one breath by Joe Branton, as these people have. But before you start, Joe, this week we've got a very special musical accompaniment. Matt, are you ready?
I've got to try and find the right one.
I'm so tired. I don't know if I can do this.
There's another name
exhausted.
This week as well.
I know.
Came out.
We need a tempo.
Okay, let's just do 120. Let's keep it simple for him.
Okay.
I reckon faster.
420.
You're going to have to hold the speaker on it close to the mic, Matt.
Where's the speaker? I think it's underneath.
Sounds like you've just thrown it down the stairs.
Great radio. That'll do.
Okay, that's good enough. That's good enough.
Joshua Mitchell, Chris Wolfman, Cutlerton, Ryan McDowell, Robert Cousins, Rob Gruhl, Nate Nagel, Tucker Abaddon, Ernie Cooper, Emery James Baker, Christoph Rappelmuller, Zane Omar, Matt Roberts, Dave Lee, Martin Cliff, Matt Davis, Aaron Sherman, Blake Weiland, Jake Gray, Christopher Loseth, Juan Correa, Scott Kennedy, Robin Smith, Rob Nordwack, Rob Grant, Derek Rich, Chris Connors, Andy Joyce, Carlos Branson, Steve Morgan, Blair Toms, Mark Cross, Brad Pace, JD Short, Andy McKenzie, Laurie Anstis, Paul Gorgon, Will Clare, Scott O'Brien, Phil Thompson, Moo Gravett, and the one, the only, Colin Anderson!
There we go. An excellent performance from both Joe and Matt this week.
I nearly passed out.
I loved it. I think we're getting close. If you want to see or listen to a man die from speaking names in one breath, you can go to patreon.com/guitar nerds and add your name to the list, and we'll see if we can get Joe to actually keel over with the sheer amount of names he has to read. If you want to join the conversation, you can go to facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds forum. Lots of fun and games to be had there. You can follow us on Instagram and Twitter @guitar nerds. You can go to youtube.com/guitar nerds videos to see new videos, or you can go to the new shiny guitarnerds.net website, which is a hub for all of the content we're doing. You can see the latest video, you can see the latest podcast, you can see the Instagram feed, you can buy merch. It's all on there, and it looks well good. I spent all of Saturday morning doing it all up, and it looks fantastic.
It does look really good. You have done a good job.
I've done a good job. It took like 2 hours. I was amazed by how
easy the internet is nowadays.
Well, when I found another site that basically did exactly what we wanted, I just copied that and it was easy.
Wicked.
It was really good. With that, we will speak to you next week.
Cheers, gang.
Well, bye-bye.